This is Free Speech Radio News for March 16th. I'm Matt Martin. Coming up, a new war in the Balkans, Yugoslavian troops head into the NATO-imposed buffer zone to battle ethnic Albanian separatists as fighting spreads to Macedonia. In Mexico City, the Zapatistas demand guarantees for indigenous rights in the Mexican Constitution. And in South Africa...
So some Sundays you listen, or most days of the week, you can listen to Schule and Swaggart and people like that on the air. It's really indecent.
Bush Radio, the country's first community station, tries to fend off a challenge from U.S.-style Christian radio. In the south of Serbia, the Yugoslav army is completing its deployment to a buffer zone separating Kosovo from the rest of Serbia. NATO created the zone 2 years ago following its 1999 bombing campaign. It was designed to separate NATO-led KFOR troops from Serbian forces. But over the past 2 years, the so-called ground safety zone has become a haven for armed ethnic Albanian extremists, intent on annexing southern Serbian cities in the Preševo Valley and uniting them with Kosovo. Over the past 15 months, ethnic Albanian troops have shelled Serb villages, killing dozens of civilians and 19 Yugoslav soldiers. This week, the fighting has spilled over into neighboring Macedonia, threatening a new war in the Balkans. Correspondent Jeremy Scahill filed this report from the buffer zone, where the Yugoslav army had just returned.
It was no secret during the NATO air war of 1999 that the United States and other Western governments backed the Kosovo Liberation Army. But over the last 2 years, the armed Albanians, who were once the darlings of the West, have gone on a rampage, forcing some 200,000 Serbs from Kosovo. Now, Albanian militias have taken their campaign to drive the Serbs from the region out of Kosovo and into other areas of Serbia, and more recently, Macedonia. So serious is the threat to regional security that NATO has allowed the return of the Yugoslav army to areas of the buffer zone with Kosovo to face the armed Albanians. Some say it is the NATO alliance turning its back on its one-time allies, but Yugoslav President Vojislav Koštunica says his army is being sent in to clean up someone else's mess. He accuses the KFOR peacekeepers of encouraging what he calls Albanian terrorism instead of preventing it.
But we must warn that it is only a part of the safety ground zone, and the very dangerous part of the safety ground zone. And that is maybe one more proof how inefficient in all these years and now KFOR has been.
On a rainy, cloudy day earlier this week, a specially created unit of the Yugoslav army deployed its forces to the mountainous terrain of southern Serbia. Its mission? To cut the pipeline of arms flowing in from Kosovo. The move has enraged Albanian leaders in the area, who say the buffer zone should be widened and not opened for Serb forces. Riza Halimi is leader of the Party for Democratic Action, the largest political party in the Preševo Valley.
Zato ovo veliko pojačanje koja sada pristižu.
Because of the large reinforcement of Yugoslav army forces, we cannot see this as anything other than open pressure on the Albanian population in this region. He says there is a real danger for a further ethnic cleansing of the area, which in turn threatens to escalate the already difficult situation. Halimi says on Saturday the Albanian community in the area will hold a mass protest against the return of Yugoslav forces to the area, a move which itself could escalate the crisis. In the small, predominantly ethnic Albanian village of Trnava, citizens watched as columns of Yugoslav army vehicles zoomed past their houses. Many gathered at a corner store in the village center, expressing their disappointment in their one-time liberators from NATO. Baki Baciri is an unemployed factory worker who says the area belongs with Kosovo. Baciri doesn't understand why NATO would allow the forces, once labeled ethnic cleansers by the West, back into his village.
They made a mistake.
They're going to have problems because of that.
They're going to be excesses
and harassment 100%. That army knows in Kosovo. They massacre people, evil. They're the same ones that are here.
Just down the street from the corner store, An old Serbian woman, one of just 60 Serbs in the village, was clearly terrified. "The Serbs cannot succeed," she told me. "I'm old. I don't understand anything." Meanwhile, fighting rages in northwestern Macedonia, where the armed Albanians have stepped up their attacks on Macedonian security forces. Seasoned Balkans observers are now looking at this crisis with a terrible sense of deja vu. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Jeremy Scahill in the buffer zone in southern Serbia.
After a two-week caravan from Chiapas to Mexico City, a delegation of Zapatista leaders now faces an arduous political challenge, pressuring the Mexican Congress to adopt its proposal for indigenous rights. The Zapatistas have demanded a hearing before the full Congress to plead their case and say they won't leave Mexico City until the provisions of the 1996 San Andreas Accord are enacted. But many conservatives say Mexican law doesn't even permit the Zapatistas to make such an appearance. At issues are changes to the Mexican Constitution, which would grant new rights and recognition to Mexico's 10 million indigenous people. Travis Lee has more from Mexico City.
Peace in Chiapas will still be a distant dream if lawmakers can't insert new rights for indigenous people into the Mexican Constitution in accordance with the San Andreas Peace Treaty signed in 1996. This week, the lawmakers in charge of peace negotiations suggested the Zapatistas meet with 20 legislators to discuss new native rights laws, since a hearing of the full Congress is not standard fare. But Zapatista leader Marcos rejected the plan, saying if foreign dignitaries and even a drug kingpin have spoken to the full congregation, he should have that right. The Zapatistas fear that meeting with a committee may leave them with watered-down changes. According to Juan Ansaldo of the National Indigenous Congress, Mexican natives want a permanent role in the country's decision-making process.
Los pueblos indígenas han insistido.
Indigenous people have insisted that to get to the bottom of this issue, not just poverty, but the role of indigenous people in the kind of development they want, a fundamental change is needed between the Mexican state and these populations.
Un cambio fundamental en la relación entre el Estado mexicano y los pueblos.
Ansaldo says International Labor Federation standards require the Mexican government to provide fair opportunities to indigenous populations, and that's all the Zapatistas want.
No vienen a tirar al gobierno.
They haven't come to bring down the government. They haven't come to ask the transnational corporations to leave. They're not asking to expropriate property. Instead, they've come to ask that the law be fulfilled in the context of international legal standards.
Marco normativo del derecho internacional.
Marcos would rather return to the jungle than meet with only a handful of legislators. However, it seems an unlikely outcome since his soaring popularity after the historic march on the Capitol makes it hard for politicians to say no. President Vicente Fox certainly won't. Marcos has even accused Fox of trying to appropriate the Zapatista March and Native Rights Initiative to increase his political capital. Fox says his actions are part of an overall plan to promote free expression and economic equality.
Todos los mexicanos, todos queremos ver iniciado ese diálogo.
All Mexicans want to see this dialogue begin with the Congress and the House of Representatives. The task of the president is to push and promote the approval of this indigenous rights legislation, not for Marcos and not for the Zapatista Army, but for 10 million indigenous people.
Fox's moment of truth has not yet arrived. It'll come when he has to decide how much government money and effort he dedicates to helping these poorest of Mexico's 40 million poor. Congressman Demetrio Sodi, a member of the peace negotiating team from the left-leaning Democratic Revolution Party, says Fox's focus on promoting small business is not going to reach native populations. In order to live up to the 1996 peace accords, the government's going to have to lay down some cash.
In terms of education, health, support for production, and basic nutritional aid and road infrastructure, these are isolated villages. So the Mexican government needs to dedicate sufficient resources. Right now, it doesn't have them. Now, the government spends about $1.5 to $2 million on fighting poverty. A fiscal reform should bring in about $20 million more. And there's a lot you can do with that money for indigenous people, and in general for the millions of people who live in extreme poverty.
In addition to equal services and living conditions, changes in indigenous rights laws would mean a recognition of traditional justice systems, the main sticking point for conservatives in Congress. But after 7 years of civil war in Chiapas, peace for power sounds like a good deal to most. In Mexico City, I'm Travis Lee for Free Speech Radio News.
The Zapatistas began their armed uprising on New Year's Day of 1994, the same day the North American Free Trade Agreement went into effect. The effects of trade liberalization on indigenous and poor people in Mexico have received little attention in mainstream coverage of the Zapatista caravan. But as Thatcher Collins reports from Mexico, free trade continues to be an issue for the Zapatistas and their supporters.
The Zapatistas followed the 1914 path of Pancho Villa and Emiliano Zapata, the last rebels to publicly enter Mexico City. Among the most important results in that revolution was the adoption of Article 27, which secured national ownership of natural resources and granted communal land to villages for subsistence. The North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, nixed that law and caused the Zapatistas to rise up in 1994 against the Mexican government. That law is a barrier to oil exploration and a proposed free trade zone highway, Puebla-Panama. Due to similar barriers in other American countries, the Zapatistas are raising the costs for the upcoming NAFTA-like free trade area of the Americas, due to be finalized by North and South American governments this April in Quebec City. Che Lopez is a member of the San Antonio Southwest Workers Union.
We battle military bases. We're against contamination of military bases. Worker justice, fighting for worker rights, you know, better occupational health and safety, against the NAFTA trade agreements, you know, the whole thing of the just transition of companies closing down in the U.S. and coming down to Mexico and exploiting workers, third world countries, violating indigenous rights, a series of things. The young people, for example, the cultures being lost amongst the young people. Our educational systems not teaching us our true history.
Underlying this loss of culture is the need for a cheap, flexible migrant workforce for mostly U.S. export-based businesses, previously mitigated in Mexico by Article 27. Keeping public services out of indigenous areas provides another incentive to bring migration and cultural assimilation to indigenous people. Comandante Esther explained to the crowd on Sunday.
Principalmente a las mujeres mueren por partos, ven sus hijos morir en sus brazos por falta de atención médica.
Principally, women die from childbirth. They see their children die in their arms for lack of medical attention, because in the indigenous towns, there are no health centers, and if there are, we do not receive ingenuous treatment like a person, putting away the medicine in a doctor, while a government employee and mass media arrive to receive an image of what healthcare in the indigenous towns is like, and thus manipulate the information.
Comandante David took on new pro-free trade president Vicente Fox, former Coca-Cola CEO. He warned him not to, quote, add 100 padlocks to the unique door that leads to peace with justice and dignity.
No le costaba al señor Fox cumplir estas 10 demandas. Porque qué le costaba a Fox darle a los pueblos indios de México lo que en más de 500 años...
It does not cost him, Mr. Fox, to fulfill these 3 demands, because what is the cost to Fox of giving the Indian peoples of Mexico, which in more than 500 years they have no longer had, that is to say, the constitutional recognition of their rights and their culture? What costs are there to Fox for him to release our companions, who do not have a crime greater than having raised their voice to say, enough of living and dying in oblivion? Are not those that planned, organized, and executed the massacres of innocent people in Chiapas, in Guerrero, and other states enjoying total freedom and have the privilege of being awarded some high position in the country government?
Y tienen el privilegio de ser premiados de algún alto cargo en el país o en el extranjero.
The 3rd unfulfilled demand is the removal of 7 military positions in Chiapas of little military consequence. Why are the Zapatistas not happy with Vicente Fox, who welcomed them to Mexico City? Subcomandante Marcos explains to the crowd.
Si el templete donde estamos está donde está, no es accidente. Es porque de por sí, desde el principio, el gobierno está detrás de nosotros.
If the place we're standing is where it is not an accident. It is because from the beginning, the government has been at our backs. Sometimes with armed helicopters, sometimes with paramilitaries,
sometimes with bomber planes, sometimes with tanks, sometimes with soldiers, sometimes with police, sometimes with offers to buy or sell consciences, sometimes with offers of rendition, sometimes with lies, sometimes with strident declarations, sometimes with forgetfulness, sometimes with expectant silences, sometimes, times like today, with impotent silences.
Y a veces, como hoy, con silencios impotentes.
Comandante Tacho, in his speech, uses the indigenous pronunciation of the word Mexico.
¡Vivan todos los pueblos de México!
¡Viva!
¡Viva el pueblo de México!
¡Viva!
That pronunciation is symbolic of the whole caravan, putting the indigenous back into all of Mexico, including democratic representation in the government, local control of village economies, indigenous-style consensus, and the National Indigenous Congress. For Free Speech Radio News, with reading from Laura Kramer, I'm Thatcher Collins in Mexico City.
On Thursday, a Florida court sentenced John Silva, a 15-year-old boy convicted of strangling a younger child, to life in prison without parole. The sentence came only a week after another Florida boy, Lionel Tate, was sentenced to life without parole for killing a 6-year-old family friend. At the time of that killing, Tate was only 12 years old. The cases have raised serious questions about the justice of handing out increasingly harsh sentences to younger and younger offenders. Mitch Perry reports from Tampa.
For the second time within the week, a teenager in Florida has been sentenced to life in prison without parole. 15-year-old John Silva showed no reaction to the sentence when it was announced in Interlochen, Florida, as he was tried as an adult and convicted of first-degree murder for strangling a younger playmate and dumping his body into a dry septic tank. His victim, 12-year-old Jerry Lee Alley Jr., was found hogtied at the bottom of the tank last May. Silva was a neighbor and schoolmate of the boys in Interlochen. Prosecutor Gary Wood said he thought Silva would kill again if he was freed from prison. Last week, a 14-year-old boy, Lionel Tate, was ordered to serve the rest of his life in prison without parole for killing a 6-year-old family friend. Defense attorneys said he was imitating wrestling movies he had seen on television. In that case, the judge was bombarded with public pleas to find a way around the mandatory sentence Florida law prescribed for the boy. He refused. In a scathing 40-minute statement, the judge heaped scorn on Tate's mother, the boy's lawyer, the prosecutor, and Tate himself, whose acts he called cold, callous, and indescribably cruel. In Tallahassee, Governor Jeb Bush said after Tate's verdict was announced that he would consider a petition for clemency, but made no commitment on how he would rule. It is believed that Tate may be the youngest American to receive a life sentence. Mitch Perry, Free Speech Radio News, Tampa.
Bush Radio, South Africa's first community radio station, began in 1988. It didn't even have a place on the dial. Its first programs were distributed around Cape Town during South Africa's 1988 state of emergency on cassette. Then, in the early 90s, Bush Radio went on the air as a pirate station until the government finally granted it a frequency. In its early years, the station faced repression from the apartheid regime. Many of its producers were arrested for broadcasting ideas which were shut out of South Africa's state-controlled media. Now Bush Radio is facing a new challenge. A Christian station backed by Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network wants to take its place at 89.5 FM. Zane Ibrahim has been a community radio activist in South Africa for over 25 years and is the station manager at Bush Radio. I asked him how the media landscape has changed in South Africa since the end of apartheid.
Not a good change. It's not a good change. We were all drunk on our revolution and our liberation in the early early 90s, and things were okay. We were very hopeful, but our voices are under siege right now. Print and broadcasting is under siege. Yeah. Most of our print is owned by either Murdoch or Tony O'Reilly in England owns the newspapers, all the newspapers. You wouldn't believe what's going on down here with regards to technologies, you know, and especially in broadcasting. In this case, it's a group aligned with the Christian Broadcasting Network in the United States. What has happened is the Christian Broadcasting Network in the United States bought up a lot of analog stations and shipped the equipment down to the Southern Hemisphere, especially in Africa. So there's Christian stations popping up everywhere. So some Sundays you listen, or most days of the week, you can listen to Schulen and Swaggart and people like that on the air. It's really indecent.
And how would you describe the kind of radio Bush Radio does, and why do you think it's so important?
It's Bush Radio is imagine a Pacifica in a poor country. It's literally giving voice to the voiceless. A large percentage of our people are illiterate, and they rely on radio. The radio they had before used to speak to them and down to them, to state radio, controlled by the apartheid government. The voices you're going to hear on Bush Radio are the voices of the people in the community.
Now, I can certainly understand why a government in power might side with business interests that can offer them favors and so forth against less powerful, less well-funded communities. But at the same time, why do you think the government might have an interest in, you know, wanting to have Christian right-wing radio on instead of community radio like you represent?
Well, they're well-oiled and they're very organized. We're not. We don't have the capacity to behave like a small business, you know. We were established in the first place to speak about the concerns, you know, the breast cancer, the tuberculosis that's in our country, the male terrorism and things like that. That doesn't sell. We have not been successful in attracting advertisers, whereas Christian interests have.
So is there a growing movement to defend community media, whether they're radio or newspapers otherwise, in response to this
kind of
growing centralization?
Well, people are tired. They've been fighting since, like I said, 1988, so we're getting tired. We're getting really tired. But yes, we are fighting, but we can't do it without support from outside, you know, moral support, vocal support. It would help to lobby the government, to write the Minister of Communications or the Independent Communication Authority of South Africa. When Noam Chomsky from the United States came to visit our station, he wrote us several weeks later and said, we are arguably one of the most important voices in the Southern Hemisphere, and he was very proud to have something to do with Bush Radio. I want people to think like he does, and people who believe in freedom of speech, to lobby our government and ask them to keep Bush Radio on the air at all costs. We have no interest in being popular. We strive to be necessary.
Zane Ibrahim has been a community radio activist in South Africa for over 25 years and is the station manager at Bush Radio. Free Speech Radio News is a production of Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship. Over 40 reporters on 4 continents and in 14 states are on strike against Pacifica Network News for its censorship of legitimate news stories. These reporters are putting their livelihoods on the line. They need your support. For more information, go to the strike's website at www.savepacifica.net/strike. That's www.savepacifica.net/strike. This newscast was produced by Aaron Glantz. Thanks to Vanessa Tate for technical assistance. I'm Matt Martin. Please tune in again next week.